Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, here with Founders. My thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. Very pleased to have back with us on Straight Talk, he had been here for a while, Brandon Jones, who is the Catawba River Keeper. A job you've had now, what'd you say, 7 years?
Yeah, about 7 years. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you're back here. Tell everybody a little bit about Brandon.
Sure. So I'm a Gastonia native, did my undergraduate at UNC Chapel Hill, grad school at UNC Charlotte. I've been a raft guide at the Whitewater Center for 18 seasons now, and like I say, with Catawba River Keeper for about a little over 6 3/4, coming up on my 7 years soon.
So the Catawba River Keeper's job is to do what?
Yeah, so my job is to educate and advocate to protect the entire Catawba-Waree River Basin. And so it's a massive basin, about 5,000 square miles, stretching all the way from Lake James and the Headwaters and Catawba Falls down to Congaree National Park. And so I lead a team to try and protect those waters for everybody.
So you have other people besides yourself to help you with this, or are they all volunteers?
We have grown massively since my time when I started. I think when I first got on here, we had 3 or 4 people. Now we're up to about 20 full-time employees, so it's a large group now, but we still heavily rely on volunteers. We have, last year, a little over 1,500 people came out to help us. We could not get that work done without them.
Sure. And one of the things that you do that gets the most attention is the river sweeps that you do. How often do you do those?
So we do almost a little over one cleanup per week. That's our average, but Kay D'Angelo does a wonderful job of leading that team. But River Sweep is our biggest event, and so we coordinate that with all the Marine Commissions and other groups, usually about 60 sites now. And last year we pulled out a little over 45,000 pounds of trash on that one day, a grand total of over 100,000 pounds last year. Don't worry, there's plenty more out there if you want to volunteer. It's October 5th, first Saturday in October. There's more trash out there, I promise, especially after today's deluge.
Shoo. So most of what you're finding in there is not tree branches and limbs. It's beer cans and plastic wrappers.
Plastic bottles. A lot of the plastic bottles. And tires. So many tires still. We don't pull out the tree branches. Those are great, important habitat for all the fish out there. But there's a lot of plastic and a lot of tires.
So how many communities depend upon that river for purposes of water?
Yeah, so it's not just the communities right along the river, but obviously everybody that's around this area, I think about 2 million people or so are dependent on drinking water from the Catawba. But we're also dependent on that for electricity. And so Duke Energy runs 2 nuclear facilities, 11 hydro facilities, and 2 active coal-fired power plants. And then there's another one in South Carolina that's run by Dominion. So all of our electricity is also dependent on the Catawba.
So explain in very simple terms, because it's a long process. But Duke Energy is the caretaker of the river. They're responsible for the river. Is that right?
They have a license to operate the facilities, the dams on the Catawba. And so the water itself is ours. Like as a nation, we own that water. All of us have a right to use that water. Duke has a permit. It's given for 40 years at a time. We permit them as a nation. They have a permit through the Federal Energy and License Commission to operate those dams. But there's a lot of restrictions on how they can do that. And most of that was negotiated, you know, from 2005 to about 2016 when that relicensing agreement was actually signed by all the stakeholders.
Yeah, I mean, if you live here in New York County, all you have to do is look in the sky and just see the big plume. They use an awful lot of water up there to cool the, you know, run that nuclear power plant.
Yeah, that nuclear facility is evaporating about 18 million gallons a day.
18 million gallons a day. So the 2 million people living in different communities, they're collectively drawing, what would you guess, in terms of water per day?
Yeah, so the number can get kind of different depending on how exactly you're stretching it. But all the communities along the river are pulling out, you know, somewhere in the order of about 400 million gallons per day. But most of that water is actually put right back in. So we have those intakes, the water is pulled out into the community, it's used, and then we flush or it goes down the drain, it goes to a wastewater treatment plant where it's, you know, brought back into our environmental standards and then discharged back in. So most of the water that we're using has been reused many, many times upstream.
Which is the way you want it to be.
Exactly. That's the only way that we can grow sustainably, is by having the same water in there and being able to reuse it over and over again.
Yeah. A number of years ago, and I don't know how many years ago it was, but 10 years plus, there was a big stink when Charlotte wanted to draw water out of the Catawba, but they were going to release it into the Yadkin River Basin and not return it to the Catawba. And that created a great big back and forth that ended really with some kind of a bi-state commission. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been a long process, but you know, Charlotte has always transferred some of the water outside the basin. Charlotte's built on a ridge line, and so part of the county, the eastern part, think of like the UNCC University area, that's actually in the Yadkin PD watershed. And so any water that they get from Charlotte Water, from the Catawba, doesn't come back. So they were grandfathered in to have about 16.9 million gallons per day back in the 90s. And then in their early 2000s, 2001, 2002, they needed more because that area had been growing rapidly.
Sure.
And so then they requested to bump that number up to 33. As you said, many of the communities were concerned. A couple years after that, Concord Kannapolis did the same thing. And then at that point, the Attorney General for South Carolina actually sued North Carolina and created, like I said, a lot of these standards to make sure that our future growth is actually accounted for and that we are making sure that there's an interstate agreement now about how interbasin transfers are going to happen in the future. And Charlotte is now on that threshold again. And so they are continuing to grow in that area, and they are going to be requesting more water be transferred out of the Catawba.
So a layman would say, well, what's the big deal? Why don't they just put the water back into the Catawba? And I gather it's money. It costs an awful lot of money to do that.
It is possible to pump water uphill over that ridgeline and back to the Catawba. But it is very, very expensive. There's some preliminary estimates out there, you know, looking at somewhere around $600 million to $1 billion. That's just the capital to get it done, plus, you know, recurring costs each year. And, you know, there are other alternatives to that. And so we are just now beginning this process to identify all those alternatives. And then they will have to do a full alternative study.
Okay, so here we are. Everybody got surprised here a couple of weeks ago when Charlotte announced we need to have 30 million, 33 million more than we're drawing out now. But there is a process they have to go through in being part of this commission. They just can't draw it out of there.
Correct. Yeah. So this is going to be a lengthy process. So everybody is very active right now, and I would encourage everyone to be patient. We're going to be dealing with this, I would say, for the next 2 to 4 years. We have one opportunity right now to engage and to make your voice known. You've got until August 30th to submit comments. But there will be more opportunities. We're going to be then going into this stakeholder group to identify these alternatives. They'll hire a company to actually do that, a third-party company to do all those alternative analyses, and then the environmental impact statements that go along with them. There'll be another point to comment on once those get released, and then it'll go to the North Carolina Environmental Command, the EMC, the North Carolina Environmental Management Commission, who will ultimately decide on whether or not Charlotte gets this water.
Okay.
It's a long process.
It's a long process. I got you. I guess the first question would be something, is there nowhere else that Charlotte can get the water from?
It's possible. If you look to the east of Charlotte, you know, there's the Rocky River, which does not have, river's a strong term for the Rocky at that point. It's more like the Rocky Creek. You know, there's no major reservoirs on that, though. They could try and permit one and build one. That would also be very expensive and might not be physically possible to do so. If you go even further out, you go into the Yadkin, and so there are a few lakes out there. We saw that Concord Kannapolis now, they actually do have a pipe where they pull some of their drinking water, you know, through the city of Albemarle from that. And so that's a possibility, is could they pull more water from that side? But the Yadkin's not infinite either. And so they'll have to, it's a long way, and it's a long way uphill. And so cost is going to be a big part of this. There's also reusing the water that's already there in the basin. And so UNCC does have a gray water system where some of the wastewater that they use is cleaned, and it goes back, and they use that for flushing toilets, for irrigation, you know, for things that you don't need, you know, potable water for.
So you say there are options.
Yes.
Those are a couple of them.
Yes.
What else is out there on the table that should be examined?
The biggest thing that we're pushing that was not done during the last two of these is to actually look at water conservation.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, right now.
What a novel idea.
Yeah, I know, it's wild. Well, here in the Southeast, you know, we don't generally think about water the same way that they might out West. And we generally think of it as a fairly infinite resource, and we use it for everything. And we don't often really look to conservation. But that's something that needs to happen. This is not an infinite resource, and there are lots of ways that we can conserve water that are not going to drastically change people's lifestyles.
Now, when we're talking about conservation, we're not talking just for the people in Charlotte. We're talking about anybody along the river.
It's Charlotte right now. You know, they're applying for this interbasin transfer, but there are many, many, many communities that are on ridgelines. So basically just kind of going up I-77, you know, Mooresville, Statesville, Gastonia's actually on a ridgeline, York County's on a ridgeline. You know, some of the residents that live in the Broad are actually transferring water from the Catawba. Lancaster, they have a permit to discharge some into the Yadkin as well, but they do have a new intake to offset that. Chester's on a ridgeline. So whatever we decide now for Charlotte needs to be applicable to the entire basin. And so some, you know, standard conservation measures, things like, you know, not watering your grass at noon when it's all going to evaporate. You know, this is things that are already being done in Georgia, for example. There's some other things that we've seen out closer to Durham where they're capturing stormwater, and again, using that for irrigation. There's a lot of different possibilities, and we need to take a good hard look at those and find something that's going to work for the entire basin.
Well, if anybody ever wanted to have an example of what can happen, all you have to do is go out there to just outside of Las Vegas, the great big old Hoover Dam, the Colorado River. If you go out there and you take a look at the basin behind the dam, you'll see a great big white ring around the mountains. And that's where the water level used to be. And when I was out there probably 4 or 5 years ago now, I remember they came across on the loudspeaker and said, ladies and gentlemen, you're now seeing the Colorado River at its lowest level since this dam was built. And I kept asking myself, I wonder how much longer before it's below the intakes and there's nothing to push through there. I mean, that's what can happen when you have overdevelopment, correct?
So they've got some different problems out there. You know, that whole structure was built on the fact that they were expecting more water than they're actually getting. We are very fortunate here in the Southeast that we are forecasted to maintain our roughly 46 inches of rain per year, even with climate change. But as you mentioned, we have a lot more people now. And so that same drought that we experienced in 2007, 2008, when we were a couple days from shutting down the Beauwater facility or running out of water in Belmont, we now have, I think, almost double that population. And so that is our big challenge here. We're going to have about the same amount of water, but we've got a lot more people that are using it. And so we need to be more efficient. We need to be really mindful about how we're using this water and making sure that we are returning as much as possible.
And for those of us who were here in the early 2000s, can remember that drought so clearly that you could go out to Lake Wylie, go to your friend's house, and you could literally walk out to not quite the middle, but almost the middle of the river, because there was no river. It was just dried up mud. All those boats were sitting there on the mud. I mean, it was a reality.
T-Bones on the lake was not actually on the lake anymore. They had a nice little kind of flat green in front of them.
Did we really learn any lessons from that?
We did. I mean, I was not here at that time, admittedly. I was working on my undergraduate degree then, but a lot of different things came out of that. I think one of the most important things that was a part of that solution is the Catawba Water Management Group. And so this is all the intakes now getting together with Duke Energy and designing these low inflow protocols. So making sure that everybody's talking to each other, which seems pretty basic, but it wasn't happening before that. And so now all of these different users are actually coordinating their withdrawals to make sure that we're not overtaxing one section or the other. There's also since then put in new flow minimums. And so I think at that time, Duke was required to release something like 400 cubic feet per second per day. And now that number's been bumped up to 1,400. And so almost a little over three times the amount of water is going to be constantly released just for ecological flows.
Shoo-wee. Ah, goodness gracious. So it's a big river. It's a huge river. But if we need to learn from what's happened to others, because it can happen right here.
It's happening.
It's happening. Well, there you go. It's happening. And I'm wondering, when you say whatever is comes out of this latest discussion in terms of conservation, we're going to have to create an incredible mindset to everybody up and down that river. That's part of the bi-state organization to do this and to do that. If you're going to water, you know, at this time of the day, not at this time of the day. That's a tall order.
Yeah, it's not going to happen overnight, right? And we are going to need to put some real emphasis behind this. We're going to need some carrots and we're going to need some sticks. You know, right now, there's just not really a lot of incentives to conserve water. It's super cheap and you don't get anything for conservation. And so making sure that maybe our, you know, system or our cost of water is more progressive, so that, you know, if you save a lot of water, you save money. Making sure maybe if you take out your grass and put in native plants in your yard, something like that, that you get a credit for that. You know, making it more financially, like, you know, advisable for you to put in the cistern and catch some rainwater and use that for your garden. You know, right now some people do this because they want to. But we could create incentive structures to where this makes a lot more sense.
Easier said than done.
Certainly.
And I really believe it'll be easier to work with the younger generation in understanding this than, let's say, somebody like me who's been doing it this way forever. I mean, just like we teach kids about litter and teach kids about drugs in school, we pretty well program them to know what's good and what's bad.
Yeah, this is not going to happen overnight. I mean, the good news here is that, like, we're starting with Charlotte. Charlotte not only has the resources to lead in this way in conservation,
sure.
But I think that there's a willingness there. You know, at least when I've talked to the officials, you know, in Charlotte Water and these other groups, you know, they're interested in trying something new. They understand that, like, we're not just going to give them another allowance, you know, extension. Because that's what's happened so far is, you know, in 2001, they said we need more, and the basin as a whole gave them more. And if we do the same thing right now, if we give them another 30 million gallons per day, we're going to be in the exact same place 30 years from now, but we're going to have two or three times as many people. And so we have to start addressing this on a more systemic level than just giving more water to everybody that asks for it.
So it's not an adversarial relationship?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No, we have a good working relationship with Charlotte Water, and most of our members, honestly, are Charlotte Water. I get my water from Charlotte Water, so
right.
I certainly don't want to see us, you know, throwing a bunch of money away at something that's not going to be sustainable for other communities.
Sure. We're going to take our mid-program break, remind you that you're listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, as is Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Well, here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, we do fresh subs and salads. We do them 6 days a week. And you know what? I watched that Catawba Riverkeeper, old Brandon Jones, just take one of those down. It's pretty good, wasn't it?
Very good. Very
and how
good
do we do it? At the count of three, one, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice.
Garden, garden, garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
I like the friendly service, and I like that the meat's fresh and the food tastes good. They slice the meat right there in front of you.
Man, it's just utterly delicious.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Most people experience orthopedic concerns at some point in their lifetime, whether it's arthritis, back pain, injury, or any other condition. At Piedmont Medical Center, our team understands joint pain can make a huge difference in your day-to-day activities, and we stand ready to help. With minimally invasive surgical options available, the orthopedic teams in Rock Hill and Fort Mill are here to help you break free from pain so you can live more happily. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Stream TV from Comporium is more than just TV. It's accessing all your favorite shows and movies. From here, in there, up there somewhere, here too, we won't tell. It's restarting shows mid-show. It's TV that learns the difference between what you like and what you love. It's what you want, when you want it, where you want it. So yeah, we're more than your internet company. We're your smart TV, just got a whole lot smarter company.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Relax this summer with a promotional rate on select travel purchases with your Founders Federal Credit Union credit card. Now through August 31st, get 6.99% APR for 6 months on qualifying purchases, including airfare, hotels, restaurants, and cruise lines. Don't let interest rates slow you down this summer. Visit foundersfcu.com/travel to learn more. On March 1st, 2025, the promotional APR revert to the effective APRs previously disclosed. Call 800-845-1614 for details about credit costs and terms. Membership qualification required.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
It's just always a great, consistent meal.
Enjoy the Italian sub with the salami.
I enjoy just the atmosphere.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Brandon Jones is with us. He is a Catawba Riverkeeper. He and his staff of 20 plus about 1,500 volunteers watch after the Catawba River from point A to point B, and it's a big, big, big responsibility. So earlier in the show, we were talking about, you know, the river sweeps, and that annually you're pulling out about 100,000 pounds of plastic, tires, bottles, you know, all kinds of stuff. Years ago, there was a great big headline in the newspaper that the Catawba River was the most endangered river in the country. Is that still true today?
Sure. So the endangered rivers list is put out by American Rivers, and it really highlights, you know, something that is, you know, impacting that river that year. So this is redone each year, and it really highlights something that needs to change. And so back in 2007, 2008, during the drought, we were put on there because we were over allocating our water. And we were at that time, you know, scheduled to run out of water, I think, by the 2030s. With the current practices. And so that was a big problem. And again, some of that has been addressed. I think in 2014 we were on that list, and that was from coal ash. Now, we had seen the Dan River spill. We had four actual like stockpiles of coal ash mm-hmm. in our waterways or right beside it. And this is also in the wake of the big Kingston coal ash spill. And so we've been listed twice on that. I'm trying to keep us off that list again. That would be ideal. But it is a list that they redo each year based on what's actually happening and what can change. You know, otherwise, like you said, the Colorado River would just be on there every single year.
Tell the audience how many tires were pulled out of the Catawba River last year?
Yeah, about a little over 1,000 tires.
1,000 tires.
But we're going to probably break that number this year. We pulled 40 out of Sugar Creek just last Friday. So there's lots of tires out there. I am happy to say that a large majority or a large percentage of those are white walls. And so these aren't people that are like actively throwing their tires in the river. This is legacy trash. And so every tire that we remove, they're probably not going to come back. Unlike a lot of the plastic bottles that we pull out.
And we can remind people that here in York County, you can take those tires, I think, through the convenience centers, and they'll take care of disposing.
Every county in North and South Carolina has a tire disposal place. You can bring up to 4 tires for free.
Okay. Once again, everybody who has a phone is getting buzzed about something. Anyway, The main purpose of what's going on here is Charlotte wants to draw 30 million more gallons. There's a process they have to follow. They just can't willy-nilly do it like they could years and years and years ago. So the process has begun. Is that correct?
Yes. So the first thing they did was let everybody know that they were considering doing this and that they were about to, you know, run out of transfer allocation water. You know, something that they like to point out, and I'll help them out here, they're not asking to withdraw any more water from the Catawba. What they're asking to do is not put that water back in by transferring it over to the Yadkin. So again, they'll make that distinction a lot, but the effect is that there's going to be 30 million gallons less for downstream users like Rock Hill. So they've started this process by letting everybody know. They held a series of community meetings. The next step will be these stakeholder engagement meetings. And so these will be for groups like us to come in and start suggesting alternatives and which things need to be studied. It's going to be a lot of transparency in these meetings. They're going to be live streamed. And if anybody is interested, they'll be able to attend those meetings. Once we all kind of come together and say, here are all the different ways that we could do this, then they're going to hire a firm to come in and actually fully investigate each of those alternatives.
Who's going to pay for that?
Charlotte.
Okay. Just to make sure.
Yeah. Right. Charlotte ratepayers, like myself, will be paying for that study. And then once those have all been actually studied and the environmental impact of each of those has been determined, then they will select one. They will apply that to the EMC, and then that will again go out for public comment, public discussion. But that process, just that first process of going down each of those paths and really looking at each of these alternatives, we expect that to take over a year.
And then, of course, you got appeals.
Yes. Yes. If they choose something during this process and the EMC does give them a permit, that permit can be appealed.
Okay. So the one year could be 2 years or 3 years or whatever.
It could certainly stretch out. You know, there's a bit of a deadline here where they have right now a permit to transfer 33 to the ever-growing University and Mint Hill areas. And they're forecasting that they're going to hit that number sometime around 2028 to 2030. And so that's really their clock, as they need to make sure they stay under that. Otherwise, they might not be able to supply more water to their customers in those areas.
So let me make sure I understand this. Right now, they're drawing water out of the Catawba River.
Yes.
But they are not returning any of that water to the Catawba River.
Most of the water they are withdrawing is going back in, because most of Charlotte is on the Catawba side. And
gotcha.
So I think they're pulling out roughly 160 million gallons per day. And so I think they're discharging something like 120 maybe back. But 33, or up to 33 of that, can be transferred over into the Yadkin. So it doesn't come back in Sugar Creek.
And so what they are proposing is to not draw any more water out, but to take what they would normally put back in and ship it over to Yadkin or someplace. Is that right?
That's a good way to think of it. You know, they have a permit actually to withdraw much more than they currently do. And each year, as the population grows, that number is going to be going up, but that's true for every community.
Right. Phew. Well, this has got a lot of wheels. It's got a lot of – bet you it's taking up a lot of your time, too. Well, which means you're going to have to come back and update us, okay?
This is going to be a long process, and I'll be happy to walk you guys through it.
Brandon Jones, Catawba River Keeper, our guest this afternoon on our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. And again, just keep listening to the radio, and we'll tell you when these public meetings are. They've already had some, but there's more coming, plenty more coming. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Oh, yeah, they're here. I just wonder where the cheering crowd was here. They're here. The doctor and Buster are here, so they're going to help us out. We produce nothing more than fresh subs and salads, and we do it 6 days a week here at Substation 2. The way we do it should be known to everybody, but we got so many new people here, we just got to keep telling them over and over and over again. At the count of three, let's tell them why they should come in here for lunch or dinner 6 days a week. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice.
Garden, garden, garden.
Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.